Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit hellmanns.com.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
To the Fantasy Footballers Dynasty Podcast with Borg, Betts, and a Baller.
Welcome in. It's Wednesday, May 15th. We're back. Fantasy Footballers Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Borgagnoni, and I am joined, as always, by Matthew. Hey, you're still with me, Betts.
I am here. Someone else is not. You know, if you listen to the little intro, man, that says, hey, this is our show, who's here?
Liar.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. Just Borg and Betts today.
Yeah, you know, you and I was supposed to get the number, because that's kind of part of who I am. It's just like, let's go find this out, just this stat. But Betts and I think we've done 400 episodes plus together.
At least.
Yeah, from DFS and betting podcasts to Dynasty podcasts to whatever else we've done over the years. Yeah, we've done a lot. So we've got this chemistry, and the Ballers this week are in the middle of UDK crunch, which you think would be like, okay, we're getting fit, we're getting ripped, we're getting ready. But no, that's not what Jason, Mike, and Andy are doing this week. Instead, they are right now, we're recording all of our videos, our profile videos, everything else, because the Ultimate Draft Kit comes out June 1st. So lazy. Didn't want to be here? I don't know. You make the call, right?
Yeah, I guess you'll find out when the UDK comes out on June 1st how good those videos are, and you'll be able to judge for yourself the quality of their work. But no, man, it's here. I mean, we're a couple weeks away. It's May 15th when this is coming out in your podcast feed on YouTube, and that means we literally have 2 weeks till June 1st is here, which is also a good reminder to myself, because you and I have a bunch of work to do that comes out on June 1st as well. But, you know, we've seen a lot of the stuff behind the scenes already. I think people are going to love the product. I can't wait. June 1st every year to me feels like Christmas, you know, in the fantasy space. It's like Christmas. You get here, June 1st comes, you open your app, and this thing is beautiful. So can't wait for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of seasonality of what we do for our jobs. But I think in people's lives in general, it's May, your kids, if you have them, are about to be done with school. For some of you, that's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do for the whole summer? But it kind of like things shift from May to, okay, in football season, we're getting a schedule this week that's going to be released. So you can actually like look at, okay, here's what the games are. You also get to start, you know, bending things in your mind of what could a player be. And I think this episode, what we're going to do is talk about a range of outcomes for these rookies. I realized that I've written the same article for 3 years in a row, Betts, and the same thing has happened. A couple years ago, it was Trey Lance. And what is his range of outcomes?
Oh boy.
He gets hurt. I wrote Anthony Richardson's last year and just said, okay, here's all the range of outcomes of what he could be based on what he did, what he could do, his production profile, what running quarterbacks do. He gets hurt. I'm in the middle of writing another article about a mobile quarterback and his range of outcomes. So,
do you want to warn
people? Time's a charm.
You want to warn people who that is, so that they don't take that guy, or what?
Pro tease. We'll actually talk about that player today.
Oh, okay.
In this episode. I mean, what a tease! But yeah, we're going to talk about that. Talk about rookies, because I think at this point everything's pie in the sky. Everything's open. This guy's going to dominate targets. This other guy on the roster is a bum, and yet every single year, you have expectations and then how it actually plays out. And so a year from now, if we're having a conversation about the rookie that you just drafted on your roster, realize that his value could change. Like, it's not going to stay right here. Just because right now on a startup, you're taking him as the quarterback 10, doesn't mean necessarily that he's going to stay there. Now, Trey Lance, I looked this up, Betts. He was quarterback 10 in startups. He gets hurt. Do you want to know where he was going the next year in startups?
I feel like it was higher. Like, it probably was like
QB.
I was going to say quarterback 8.
It was QB 8 and QB 9 in that range. So injuries and even somebody, it's almost like if he came out and just sucked, okay? Like, Justin Fields was pretty bad. He had a couple of rushing moments his first year, but his value decreased the next year because he played. Trey Lance didn't really play. He gets hurt, and yet his value and the perception of people is that it went up. So this is a pro Trey Lance group right here, but it's more of just a bit at this point. Like, I have him in a super flex roster, and I'm just waiting, biding my time in the shadows, just waiting, because it's never going to happen, is it?
What's so funny about that is it's basically you, me, and Mike. Like, we're the last three truthers left on this planet. And anytime there's like a slightly positive blurb about Trey Lance, which they are few and far between. So when it happens, I mean, you and I and Mike are on it. And we're like, oh, like, this is the Vikings quarterback of the future. Oh, he's with the Cowboys. Like, he's in the playoffs. Like, we find ourselves just like making little funny excuses for him. But it's over. You know, sadly, it's over. But I believe if he could have gotten on the field, he could have been good for fantasy. For fantasy, he could have been good.
Yeah, I mean, what if I told you that every time you see a positive tweet or anything about him, it's just me feeding people, just feeding beat writers. Just, hey,
it's actually funny. If you go to Twitter and you search just Trey Lance's name, the only people that come up tweeting about him are at Kyle underscore Borg, at the fantasy PT, and at FF Hitman. That's literally all you're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, the group meetings are dwindling. I mean, the membership, the fees, people don't want to pay that anymore. I totally get it. But yeah, ultimatedraftkit.com if you want to get in on our rookie rankings, our startup rankings. I was comparing our startup rankings with a couple of other sites just to say, hey, are we different about this? So you can do that. You go to ultimatedraftkit.com if you want to be in on this. But I wanted to be a little selfish at the top. Before we get into a rookie range of outcomes, I made the mistake the other day of just putting out a tweet. And, you know, depending on where you're at in the spectrum, like, there's football Twitter, like, oh, I love football. I grew up playing football and this is, you know, a man's game. There's people that love football that didn't play football. There's people that love the analytics and the numbers behind it. And then there's people that like all of it. And I think people have a hard time whenever they see a tweet. They just want to put people in a couple different categories. So all I did, innocently, and someone called me out. They're like, dude, I don't know if you realize you jumped into a snake pit here. I was like, I just put out a tweet. But all I did was looked at a comparison between two players. And this comes from a question. I did this research because we had a question for the Dynasty mailbag this week. And this one comes from YouTube and says, I'd love to know the obsession with Chris Olave. He's wide receiver 25 and wide receiver 16 in back-to-back seasons, and he doesn't score that many touchdowns. He has just 9 touchdowns in 2 seasons, and he's still tied to Derek Carr. The question is, why does he consistently go as a top 12 dynasty wide receiver? So I started doing the research and realized that thus far through 2 seasons, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, teammates at Ohio State, drafted, you know, 1 pick between each other, basically the same exact age, have very similar productions this year. So all I really was trying to do was like, wow, these two players are similar. Put out a chart and someone goes, you don't know ball. So Betts, tell me why I don't know ball.
Well, have you watched the tape yet? Because I mean, if you don't watch the tape, you don't know ball.
I'm still waiting. What's the channel? What football is on what channel again?
It's on YouTube, Kyle. Just look up the highlights. It is such an interesting conversation because I do agree that the general sentiment around these two players is they are both awesome dynasty cornerstone pieces. However, I think you ask, I don't know, 10 people, 8 will tell you, like, I'd rather have Garrett Wilson in dynasty league. That's just the sentiment that I get, kind of the feeling of, like, you know, Garrett Wilson's kind of in this tier and Chris Olave is just, you know, in one tier below. That's how it feels to me when you talk about those two players. But the numbers and the stats really are almost identical, and some of them actually favor Chris Olave. And I think what's interesting about the Wilson, you know, experience from last year is the expectations were sky high With Chris Olave, they were pretty high, but it wasn't like you were counting on him to be like a top eight, top five wide receiver that you saw a range of outcomes for with Garrett Wilson. Of course, four snaps in, Aaron Rodgers tears his Achilles, so that's all over. But that is what people are, I think, are hanging on to of kind of who this player is. Now, granted, yes, the quarterback play was abysmal for Garrett Wilson over the last couple of years. It's been terrible. And he's still been producing at a very high level. I mean, Chris Olave is still producing at an extremely high level. They're the same age, same draft capital, coming out of school, you know, a couple years ago with Ohio State. It was the conversation of like, which one do you prefer? Some people said Wilson, some people said Olave, some people said doesn't matter, they're both going to be fantastic. And I think all we've seen in the last couple of years in the NFL is these guys are both fantastic. They both haven't had elite quarterback play. I mean, Derek Carr is fine. Andy Dalton, at this point, not fine, right? He played with him a couple years ago. Like, it really has not been great for either guy. I think one of these guys just needs that little extra boost from quarterback play, and you will see just an outlier, like, elite season.
Yes, and I think you don't have to ask the question which one is better. I think it's more of, in Dynasty, who has met expectations and who hasn't. I think both have underwhelmed based on what we hoped they would be. Like, oh, I hope I would get a Justin Jefferson-type player. You've gotten a stupid amount of targets for Garrett Wilson, the most ever of any wide receiver through 2 years. So volume-wise, yes. Catchable targets-wise, not as good. Only 73% of his targets have been catchable. For Olave, it's 77%. So those are pretty close. But I am currently, just for the people that say you don't know ball or have you ever watched the tape, yes, I watch all these games, but also right now I'm in the process of rewatching 310 plus targets for Garrett Wilson over the last 2 years. And I can say this, it confirms what we thought coming out. I remember you wrote the rookie profile for Garrett Wilson coming out, and it's like what we loved about him was his ability to get open in space, create separation, the things we love. And I think if there is a hole to poke, it's that he's never going to be a huge yak guy based on just his frame alone. Like, he's not AJ Brown. So they're not going to throw him the same stuff. So even the screens that Garrett Wilson has seen, like he's seen 22 screens, he doesn't done a lot with them. And he hasn't done a lot with the deep targets. Now, part of that's quarterback play. It's like, it's a chicken or egg conversation. Is he going to keep getting the type of targets that don't produce for fantasy? Because then it's like, well, I'm not going to be able to get more than 7 touchdowns. But based on his targets, he should see a lot more. So we like both these players. We like them a lot. The perception is last year you had to pay wide receiver 5 price for Garrett Wilson. And right now, I think the value's gone down a little bit from last year, but it's still kind of like wide receiver 7, wide receiver 8 in startups, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, at worst, I think.
I mean, right now, that's the price and that's the expectation for him to come through. And so Chris Olave's a little bit cheaper. That's kind of the point I was trying to make, is not, is this player better or worse? Like, I would prefer Garrett Wilson in a startup, but you don't have to pay the same price based on people's perceptions. With Chris Olave, he is getting a bit of an upgrade in terms of scheme, while Wilson hopefully gets an upgrade in quarterback. I mean, he's never caught a pass in an NFL game from Aaron Rodgers, so we'll see. But like Chris Olave, there is hope for him this year, because the Saints, I don't know if you guys know this, they've been running the same plays for 15 years. I mean, this is the same offensive coordinator, you know, Pete Carmichael Jr., and now they have Clint Kubiak. So there is a reason to be bullish on Olave at his price, right?
Yeah, big time. I mean, think about like what this offense was with Pete Carmichael over the last several seasons, and just the last couple of years with Olave. It's so stale, right? They were dead last in pre-snap motion this past year, which when you look at the best teams in the league, you know, the Niners, the Dolphins, the Eagles, like when the offense is just click, like those guys and those teams and those coaching staffs are using pre-snap motion. Enter Clint Kubiak, who comes over from San Francisco, who I just mentioned was among the leaders in pre-snap motion last year. He was the pass game coordinator. So I think you're going to see just a better environment for Chris Olave. Will the quarterback play be vastly different? No, of course not. It's still Derek Carr. But get him in motion more. Get him in the slot more. You know, give him some of those targets where he can do something after the catch. And it's not just, you know, hey, get down the sideline and let's see if Derek Carr hopefully hits you and doesn't check it down to Alvin Kamara, you know, for the 15th time in the game. So there are holes for both guys. Like, it's a projection that the elite season is coming, but I think both guys, there is one coming very soon. And then with, you know, Garrett Wilson, it's all roses again because Aaron Rodgers is back. But, and I'm not saying it won't work out. I think it probably will. But the last time we saw Aaron Rodgers play in Green Bay, it was not great. And now he's missed a full season. So I do see a path where obviously it goes very well, but I see a path where it's like, Rodgers is not the same guy he was, obviously, at this point in his career. So both guys have, I think, slightly more downside than you realize for just this season, but both guys' upside is through the roof. I think it'll cost you less in a trade to go get Chris Olave. He's like one of the elite potentials that is like still, you can still acquire him like before it's too late kind of thing. And Olave for me is one of those targets this offseason.
Both players were frustrating last year. All right, let's just be honest. Like Chris Olave did have issues of drops. Garrett Wilson, you're like, wow, I got 15 targets. And you look up, you're like, does this even matter for fantasy? So it's like, you can blame the quarterback. You can blame the scheme. And I just kind of say yes, all of them. Like all of them are a part of the issue. And so it's hard when you're evaluating players. You kind of want to create a dichotomy a lot of time. Like, oh, here's why this is good and that's bad. It's like, you can kind of look at it and say, there's a menu of things to consider. You can consider the film, you can consider the analytics, you can consider the scheme. All of those things kind of are the ingredients that you care about. And so far, through 2 years, if you compare, and I did a giant article on dynasty wide receiver thresholds, if you want to look at that, these two are doing what they're supposed to do on a per route basis. I mean, Chris Olave targeted on 26% of his routes through 2 years, Garrett Wilson 24%. It's just that Olave's been more efficient on the yards while also recognizing that Olave's getting deeper targets that matter more. I mean, Garrett Wilson still doesn't have a touchdown of 20 plus air yards. So there is something to consider in that. So I'd rather have Wilson, but I agree with you. I think it's just going to be cheaper, and that's okay to be able to say that. Like, I, you know what? The Garrett Wilson manager in my league, he's not trading him to me. Like he's like, I paid this price. I got him ahead of, you know, Jameson Williams and all those other dudes, Treylon Burks, who have flamed out, and now I feel good about it. So I think at the end of the day, you're going to be happy with either of these players at the end of this year, right?
I think big time.
Yeah, that's okay. All right, so our Dynasty Startup ranks are there, udkplus.com, if you want to look at those, compare them, look at the ages, and then look at Wilson Olave. Go, well, so far that's been pretty similar, but it'll change after this year. What's the difference between me and you? So Betts and I are going to throw out some rookies, and you can find the rookie rankings, rookie profile articles, production profiles. If you just want to deep dive on these players, you can do that. And kind of give a high end, a median, and a low end range. A lot of times when you look at ranks, they're set in a linear fashion where you go like, well, this player is ranked ahead of him, and so he must be better. It's like, no, well, like the player we're going to talk about first is Jaden Daniels. His high-end outcome seems so much higher than what you could say about J.J. McCarthy. But in our rookie rankings, like they're in a similar tier right now if you just were to look at that. Like I'm going to write an article, I did it last year, about Superflex tiers. And with Jaden Daniels, like next year, let's just, you know, jump here and just say hypothetically, if he goes bonkers this year, let's say he goes like RG3 level or Lamar levels of like, this is a game-breaking rushing quarterback, and it works on the dual threat level. Next year, what's the highest you could see Jaden Daniels in a startup for quarterbacks?
I think he could be in the conversation as like the quarterback five. If that season comes to fruition. That's where I see him. What about you?
Yeah, that's kind of the number where it's like, okay, well, it's going to be hard to get ahead of Allen, Hurts, Mahomes, just like immediately. I mean, the weapons aren't there quite yet in Washington for me to be able to say like, this is what's going to happen. I mean, Terry McLaurin, after this year, is a question mark. Jahan Dotson, we'll see if they even pick up his fifth-year option. Austin Eckler's old. Zach Ertz should be sitting on the couch. They do have the Senator, though.
Oh, so they're set.
They're good to go. It's just like, you can look a year out. You can look 5 years out. And in 5 years, like, who knows what this team is. So let's talk about Jaden Daniels. Because he's 23 years old, taken second overall, in our rookie ranks, we have him as like the 103 to 104 in Superflex rookie rankings, which I think you and I would both say I would take Marv ahead of him. I would take Caleb ahead of him. And then it's kind of based on team need. Do you want Malik Nabers or Jaden Daniels? Is that how you feel?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And I think in that Superflex format, that's the conversation. You know, just kind of thinking about like how it goes south and, you know, kind of how guys lose value. I mean, Bryce Young is kind of the example of like, well, if it's really bad in year one, like it's really bad in terms of value in year two. Like no one wants Bryce Young, obviously. But with Anthony Richardson, we had this exact conversation last year, and it's like, well, hey, his best range of outcomes, his highest outcome is probably like Cam Newton rookie year. And you saw a couple flashes of it, and it's enough for him to hang on value, even though he missed almost the entire season. You saw enough in the first month and a half, like, oh, wow, this dude led the league in fantasy points per dropback. You see the upside he has. And so as long as he shows you something, like in year two, his value will be not just good, excellent. So as long as Jayden Daniels shows you enough in year one, specifically, I think just the rushing. I mean, obviously we want him to be able to throw too and create some deep plays with McLaurin and Dotson. But if he runs the way, you know, he did in college, which not necessarily the style, because for the love of God, like get down or get out of bounds, but just the volume of rushing, the explosiveness, that's what breaks fantasy, right? Every year you can be a terrible actual quarterback and just run enough and you're good for fantasy. And that's the game we play. So as long as he shows you enough, something like Anthony Richardson did in year one, his value in year two is not only going to hold, it's going to grow at a pretty big rate.
Yeah. And if we're talking about the median outcome, that's what we'll do for some of these players. We're saying they meet expectation, or at least they hold value going into next year. So right now in startups, we have him as the QB12. I looked at keep trade cut just to kind of get like a pulse. Also at QB12. So pretty close to what we said about Lance and Richardson in this QB10, QB12 range with upside. But a median outcome in year one to me says that he runs. Like we've said before, every rookie that gets 80 rush attempts, I wrote this a long time ago and it still holds true. It was with Kyler Murray, it's with any of these quarterbacks. If you get 80 rush attempts or in 17 games, that's about 5 per game, then you end up being a top 10 guy in points per game. That's just how it works with fantasy if you're running that much. Like if he did that and his TD rate sucks, let's say he runs, you know, 5+ times a game, he ends up with like 600 rushing yards, but the TD rate is like 3.2. We'd be like, oh man, I wish we got more than like 18 touchdown passes, but he did enough where it's like, I can see the growth. I mean, remember Lamar, his rookie year, he came in the second half and it was pretty abysmal. The completion rate, like I think he threw like 7 touchdown passes over those final 8 games, but he was running enough that you could say like, okay, this could work next year. Throws for 35. He's the MVP. So all I need from Jayden Daniels to maintain value is show me the rushing stuff that we saw in college. And then this other threshold is start 9 games. Like if you can stay on the field, not get injured or get replaced, it's like, if he's starting from day one, he's going to hit this mark. Among rookie quarterbacks who hit 9+ games started, 75% of them were a top 12 quarterback within the next 2 years. So I think that's all we're really asking is like, stay alive, run the ball, and that's good. But the high end we said earlier is like RG3 rookie year, where it's just like guns blazing right from the start. And I hate that it's the same team. It's like too easy of a comparison. But that is in the range of outcomes, considering like how efficient of a passer he is. He's not just a runner. So do you see, like, what's his high-end range in year one for passing touchdowns?
That's a tough question to answer, because I think, you know, this team, the way that it is, the weaponry is not elite. And I think it could be very good. Like, I'm a big fan of Terry McLaurin. I think he's one of the better actual NFL wide receivers who just hasn't had a quarterback literally the entire career that he's played to like get him over the hump for fantasy. But like in real life terms, like he's very, very good. Jahan Dotson, you know, a lot of people were interested in him entering year two, completely fell on his face. So who knows?
So sad.
Who knows? If he's the guy he was his rookie year, like the arrow is pointing up, obviously. If he's who he was last year, that's terrible, man. Austin Eckler is another year older, clearly on decline. Like we like Ben Sinnott, but he's a rookie tight end, and you know, not every rookie tight end is going to be Sam Laporta. So like there is a path where the weaponry just is not good enough to support an outlier, like elite top three season, the way RG3 was on pace for. So, you know, the path is there. His weapons need to be better. He needs to run and throw probably 24-ish touchdown passes to like have that elite season where you're like, this dude just finishes a top three fantasy quarterback, because he will run. It's just a matter of like, does he do enough with his arm to kind of get you over the hump?
Yeah, 25 total is a good mark for a rookie to hit. Like, I mean, there's great seasons when you think about Herbert and Baker and what Stroud just did, but we're looking like on the ground, like the combination of the two. The good thing that Jayden Daniels has is that he was accurate at LSU. He was number one in catchable target rate when he wasn't pressured. However, we mentioned before, like, when he is pressured, the dude takes off. I mean, he had the highest scramble rate that I have in my database. Like, it's just like his total number of scrambles, this is from Nate Tice now with Yahoo, is 258 since he came into college. That's more than anybody else. And just to give you, you know, some numbers with that, over the last two seasons, he scrambled, meaning it wasn't a design run play, 5 times per game. Lamar Jackson, who is the greatest rushing quarterback of all time, like last year, was doing it 3.9, and he's never done it more than 4. So for him to run and take off is an awesome thing for fantasy. It also correlates a lot of times with players who can't stand in the pocket and throw, a la Justin Fields or Johnny Manziel, who also had some crazy rushing statistics coming in the NFL. So on the low end, that's the only thing that scares me, is that he doesn't allow himself to stay in the pocket. He doesn't allow himself to actually do this. And yes, we like it for fantasy, and yet it doesn't help him develop long term the way that we saw with Justin Fields.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good comp of like how it kind of goes south. And after rookie year, Justin Fields, he still had value. So I don't, like, something really, really bad would have to happen for Jaden Daniels to not have some value next year. Now, of course, we're talking about a spectrum. Like, could he be high as the quarterback 5? Could he drop down to like the quarterback 14? Like, that's kind of where I see him in that range next year, where things go great, it's great. If you see some red flags, you're like, yeah, but he still ran, so like, I'll give him a second chance. We did that exact same thing with Justin Fields, right? Where it was like, there are red flags all over the guy's tape, all over the processing speed, all over him as a passer, but he ran and it was enough for fantasy. Now, I think Jaden Daniels is a much better passer coming out of school than Justin Fields was, so I'm not making a straight line comparison there. But just kind of that example, I think, does give you at least something in your mind's eye of like, this is how it could go, you know, from a negative standpoint, because we all want to talk about these players as if it's only going to go great. Well, there is a downside case, and I think that Justin Fields' career archetype is something to consider with Justin, or with Jaden Daniels' profile.
One more thing I just want to add about him is he didn't have to do a ton of play action stuff. You know, at LSU, it was just not really part of it. I mean, it's the lowest of the 6 quarterbacks taken. Only 17% of his dropbacks were play action. That's going to change a little bit in the NFL. The average last year was like 24%. So there will be an uptick in what they're asking him to do. With Cliff Kingsbury, I'm just one of those people that over time teams figure him out and figure out horizontal rate, but we're leaving it open that this could be a generational player. Like, there's the high end range of outcomes. So if you have Jaden Daniels in a super flex league and he's your QB2, you got to be licking your chops. Like, this is awesome. I know that there's upside here. Like, I could end the year with 2 guys. You know, if you're counting on somebody else, like, if let's say you had Herbert and Jaden Daniels, you're like, sweet, I've got this on lockdown. Or you got Burrow. It's like one of those guys where you drafted him in your Superflex draft to be a QB2, but now you have 2 powerhouses. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to running back.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate: Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellman's, and boom, next level burgers, it's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for: potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it: Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. There are 2 kinds of potato salad: deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad, and potato salad made without Hellman's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellman's.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk about Jonathan Brooks, taken by the Carolina Panthers in the second round. He's not even 21 yet. And the opinions, the reason why I want to bring him up is because the opinions in startups are very different across the three footballers. Okay, so Andy has him as running back 12, Jason all the way at running back 6, and Mike at running back 19. And I think you can argue for any of these. We mentioned earlier, like, linear rankings don't really tell a full story. You know, you can look at this Carolina offense, how bad it was. You can look at running backs in general. You could also look at him off injury. So I know he's ahead of schedule because, you know, he's human and that's what they do. But
imagine,
where's he at in the recovery process at this point in May?
Yeah, so right now the optimistic reporting, of course, because it always is optimistic, is that he's going to be ready for training camp. And I do think he's going to participate in some capacity in training camp. It's just a matter of, like, how much and, you know, where is he at in terms of his recovery as the month of July and August goes on. Because when he gets to September, you know, he will be like roughly 10 months recovered from the injury. He'll be 9 months recovered from the surgery. And that's kind of usually like the minimum to get back on the field. Now, of course, certain players meet different timelines. It doesn't always go the way that the research says, but like 9 months is kind of the standard. Upwards of like 10 months. That's just to get on the field. And then it's like, okay, how long does it take to actually get to 100%? Is it another month? Is it another 6 weeks? You know, you kind of saw that with Breece Hall last year. It's like the perfect example. Yeah, he played early in the year, but he really wasn't himself. They only gave him a handful of touches. And then as the weeks went on, it was like more and more and more. And in the last 6 weeks of the season, the dude exploded. So that's kind of the general like timeline I think that we should think about with Jonathan Brooks, that, you know, he's probably going to get off to a slow start. That's expected, but this is dynasty. Like, this is not a redraft conversation. It's more about what does he do in year one in the last 2 months that gives you, you know, a value of him moving into 2025.
For running backs that are kind of seen as the top of the class, like, and he was taken first, and most people are taking him over Benson. It really comes down to a couple things. One, don't get injured again in terms of valuation. And two, don't get passed on the depth chart. As long as you maintain your position, then you're in a good spot going into year two, because that's kind of the sweet spot. Like, even Jonathan Taylor was taken early. It was kind of a slow roll. And then he finished the season RB5 going next year. It was like, okay, he is established as the dude. They're not, you know, farting around with Nyheim Hines or whatever else they're doing anymore. It's like, this is the dude. Now, he has some players in his path that we can kind of laugh at, right? Like, we can be like, okay, so they paid Miles Sanders a ton of money. I don't know, just to have some money. Like, I don't know the point anymore. They brought in Rashad Penny just for, you know, another body, and Chuba Hubbard's in his final year. So entering next year, it's possible he's the only real running back on the roster that matters. So that's like the easiest thing for me to kind of check off is say, competition wise, it'll be slow, but I see him, you know, getting 15 plus touches by the end of the year, and that's valuable. But production wise, what does he have to do in year one for us to feel like, okay, this guy is in that top five conversation? Because that's where he can go and be there next year, where you're like, okay, well, you know, I take him ahead of a lot of other names of people that, you know, are in that 5 to 10. Like, he goes ahead of Saquon in startups next year. So what does he have to do in year one in your mind?
This might sound crazy to say, but I don't think he has to do that much, honestly, because people are already factoring in, like, yes, he is coming off the torn ACL. So I know the first, I'm making this up, but like 4 weeks, 6 weeks isn't going to be awesome. But if he just shows you like something in the last 2 months of the season and has, I mean, he literally has no competition for touches based off the talent level on the depth chart. And the fact that they invested a second round pick in him when they still have so many holes on the roster. You think about the way Dave Canales talks about him, like in his pressers and stuff, they're always talking about running the football. It's an important identity of this team, using him in space kind of as a pass catcher. It's very Rashad White-esque of what you saw last year, where he saw 20 opportunities per game and 70 targets in that offense. Now, of course, he stayed healthy the entire year. It's not, you know, a one-to-one comparison, but like, I think Dave Canales wants this dude to be the workhorse whenever the time comes for him to be healthy, and I think he will be. So even if he's a little bit inefficient and it's not incredible on a bad team, like, people are still going to be excited about Jonathan Brooks entering year two, because we know players do better in year two off the ACL usually than year one. He'll have that working for him. The other thing that he'll have working for him is that he's not one of these veteran backs. Like, think about the dynasty landscape at running back right now. I mean, it's so bad where, like, you know, Derrick Henry still has a job and Josh Jacobs is kind of fizzling out, but he still's got a job and Aaron Jones got another starting job. Like, the state of dynasty running back right now is kind of ugly outside of like you know, Jahmyr Gibbs, Breece, Bijan, like CMC, you could even argue probably will lose value next year just because of his age. There's no elite young running backs outside of those three. So even if Jonathan Brooks is just like good enough, he's still going to be valued as a top 10 dynasty running back, in my opinion, next year, regardless of really how the season goes.
No, I think that's a good point that when you look at rankings right now in May and you look at the season ahead of us starting in September, things change more than you think. Like, you got 4 months until season. Oh, wait, the next 4 months are going to change it way more than you think, those second 4 months. And then you look at the names like ahead of him in our ranks. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I would take Saquon ahead of him in a startup. I would probably take Kenneth Walker, Achan. And yet, a year from now, all of those situations could look worse. Saquon with age, Kenneth Walker, like Charbonnet could get more looks. Achan, it's like one of the most fragile players to project in general. And then the name that I'm terrified to mention is Kyren Williams. Right now, he's ahead in our startup rankings, but I don't think it would shock us if we go ahead a year from now and Jonathan Brooks is somebody you would take in startups. Like, I just think the natural progression of where things are going to go job-wise and offense-wise says that Jonathan Brooks will probably be ranked ahead of him. I mean, I want to like put a reminder a year from now and just say, is that true just based on how things work out? But I don't know. I'm assuming you take Kyren in a startup, but you'd be terrified.
Between these two players, who had to take in a startup?
Yeah.
I mean, so my dynasty, methodology or like how I do startups has changed over the years. Honestly, like I think a lot more about what is this player's value going to be in a year? Because you don't want to take someone with an elite asset, a top, you know, 5, 6, 7 round pick in a dynasty startup. Those players, like, they have to have their value next year or like you're kind of screwed out of the gate. And to me, Jonathan Brooks is a player that looking back or looking forward rather in 12 months, like I just talked about, I think we'll have a ton of value. So I honestly lean Jonathan Brooks. I think now that we talk through this, like I kind of agree with Jason's rank of 6 of like this dude, a lot has to go wrong for him to lose value next year. And with the other guys, just because of age or a little bit of a fall off, if you know, Kyren isn't the same player he was last year, like it's not hard to see a path where all those guys lose value and there's only a handful of running backs that maintain it. And I think Brooks is one of those guys.
Yeah. I just look at a team, like I have a team that Jeremy and I have inherited and it's, you know, was rebuilding and Brooks was there at the 107. Now there's other wide receivers that probably carry a higher upside, but a lower hit rate of actually contributing for a roster at that spot. We took Brooks for the simple sense of like, one, we need running back, and two, a year from now, we felt very good about what he was going to be. Also, keep in mind, there's a difference between talking about theoretically somebody's startup rankings. Like, if we're doing a startup draft today, you're having a different outlook because you're building a team from scratch. If you had Kyren Williams on your team, you're like, sweet, I either got this guy off waivers a couple years ago, or, you know, in my rookie drafts or my taxi squad or whatever it was. So the inherited value that Kyren Williams is to a team is, I had no running backs. Now look at me, I have a top 5 dude. So I get that. Like right now, I would rather have Kyren if my team was playing and I'm competing for a championship, give me Kyren right now. But if you're doing a startup, you're going to have a different mindset of what you're trying to accomplish. Because with Kyren, the range of outcomes is a year from now, he's splitting the backfield or something else changes. So I hate thinking about that because in a vacuum, I want Kyren. In redraft, I want Kyren. But in Dynasty, we're having a little bit different conversation. Let's talk about Ladd McConkey. I need your first just vibes because the videos were out there on the internet. They don't give full context. They show just a little bit of highlights. But did you get to see some Ladd running around in shorts videos with the mushroom head on?
I mean, if the Chargers social team tweets it, I watch it. Their social team has earned that, okay? They've been great over the last couple of years.
True.
Yes, I did see those quote-unquote highlights where, you know, there's no defenders. It's just drills. I did see him out there. Looked good from what I saw in that 30-second clip. And that's not surprising considering he's, you know, one of those guys that projected to be pro-ready coming out of Georgia. So, yeah, I'm excited about Ladd. I think the landing spot for him, like we talked about in our last couple shows recently, is good when you consider the target competition around him.
So Ladd's 22 and a half years old. He's taken 34th overall in our rookie ranks. In one quarterback leagues, we have him as the 7th overall player in Superflex. He kind of goes to that back first round I saw in a league that I'm in, he was at the 111, another one at the 112, 110. He kind of belongs in that range. In startups, though, right now we have him as wide receiver 25, which is an ambiguous place. I'm just going to be honest. Like, when you look at startup rankings and you see, you know, whatever website you use, hopefully you get to use ours, there is a place from about wide receiver 20, whatever, to wide receiver 35 that's just a bunch of dudes at different points in their career. I think I talked about it last week with George Pickens. It's like George Pickens in year three is the same as Terry McLaurin, who's like way older. Like, it's like you kind of stick a bunch of guys in the same kind of tier. So with Ladd, wide receiver 25, Jason's the highest. Andy's a little bit lower, although Andy loves Ladd McConkey. Andy has him at 31. How would you feel about paying that price in a startup?
Yeah, I think it's fair, especially because you kind of mentioned, you know, the players roughly going around him. Like, it's a mix of some great names that I would probably rather have, but there's also a bunch of guys around him that I'm like, yeah, I see where this he loses value next year. Kind of similar to like the Jonathan Brooks, Kyren Williams conversation. And, you know, with Ladd, like I talked about, he's just going to a situation where we know the quarterback play is really good. Yes, we're a bit concerned about how much actual volume we'll see from a passing standpoint, but I don't think he's going to have a bunch of competition, not only for playing time, but just target earners on the offense. He doesn't really have those guys next to him. So, you know, it might be similar to like a Drake London target share conversation where it's like, well, they never threw, but he did see a 25% target share, that kind of thing. So it may not be like an elite rookie year, but I think you'll see some efficiency on a per route basis, which is exactly what this guy was coming out of Georgia.
That's Chargers and the Falcons, man. Just the two teams that I've, you know, linked myself to for some dumb reason.
Hey, but you know, as the second easiest strength of schedule this year.
Is it the Falcons?
No, it is the Chargers. You know, as the easiest strength of schedule this year.
Ah, there's the Falcons.
It is the Falcons. So these teams are definitely going to win, you know, 10 plus games, Kyle, no question.
Yeah, I mean, you saw Penix in the shorts video. I mean, he was just slinging it to air. You know, nobody else was there. You're getting a bunch of videos right now just to hype people up in May. So with Ladd, what does he have to do? We're going to give the high end, the median, and the low end. And when I started exploring what it would take for Ladd McConkey in year one, I think most people, the assumption is he's going to lead this team in targets. Like, if you're just looking at it right now, the way he's going in best ball, I think most people think that he's going to be ahead of Quentin Johnson, ahead of your guy, Josh Palmer. I know you're a big fan, Josh Palmer, and Will Disley, and whoever else they're running out there. It's just like, the assumption is, so if he does that, checks that box, I think you could say, okay, this is what you drafted a player with this type of draft capital to come in and command targets. And he did earn targets in college, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that we're hoping for, a separator. I think it's hard for his player type to come in and just be like a dominator in the touchdown department. But we've talked about with Justin Herbert, like, he can live off of efficiency this year, not just volume. So what do you see in year one? Like, what does he have to do to really, you know, exceed?
Yeah, I think that touchdown conversation is, you know, it's interesting because you think about this, you know, Greg Roman offense. We know they're going to run the ball. But Lamar Jackson had an outlier touchdown efficiency season when he won MVP, you know, in his second year. Like, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen with Justin Herbert, but for a while he's been kind of a volume play in fantasy, let's be honest. Like, he's had his moments where he's been efficient, but they just chuck it every year in LA, right? Now they're going to change that. I do think you'll see a spike in his touchdown efficiency. I know Andy talked about that a little bit on the overreaction show on the main show, and it makes a lot of sense to me. So if Ladd is the beneficiary of that, and he somehow gets to 8-9 receiving touchdowns and somewhere around 80 catches, that's going to be enough that people see that in year one, and they see this lack of target competition, and they're like, this dude is good. And you make the argument, okay, now you see the year two leap coming for him in 2025. Like, that's kind of the best case scenario for me. But it is tough for these fantasy wide receivers to finish as like elite options in year one, not only as a rookie, but just in an offense environment where you won't see this outlandish, you know, pass volume.
Yeah, I would look at touchdowns as a bonus to whatever he does this year. Like, I'm not coming in expecting him to get, you know, more than like five touchdowns. That's what Zay Flowers had this past year. And I was kind of use a season as a comp. Like, Zay Flowers, 108 targets. So you thought of him as the number one wide receiver aside from Mark Andrews. 77 for 858 and 5. 24% target share. He was good in zone. Like, if you put up a season like Zay Flowers, you'd be like, wow, they drafted this guy. They really targeted him. You know, they used him. And then on the really high end, I think what you want to get, this is an easy comp, but you're getting 85% of what Keenan Allen was to this team in terms of, like, you're just funneled targets. But his game is more of like a Jordan Addison. Like, don't pencil in Ladd McConkey as a slot guy. Like, that's not what he was at Georgia at all. He was all over the field. So I think he's more of a Jordan Addison. He can kill zone, and then he's getting the type of target share we care about. I mean, the target competition here is begging for him to see, I don't know, 20 plus in year one.
On like a market share standpoint, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the Zay comparison, I think, is really interesting, but there's no Mark Andrews on this team, right? It's like, where would you set the line for like his targets this year? Like, the number that came into my mind was like, best case scenario, not even best case, probably, honestly, like median is like, if this guy gets on the field right away and he's as good as we think he is, could he earn 120 targets in year one?
I think the median outcome for me is 100, but I think 120 is definitely on the table. Excuse me. But what it comes down to is just health and this offense. Like, I think he can see it because the other dudes on this team, like, they're just not target earners, right?
I mean, Josh Palmer, 17.5% is respectable. It's like wide receiver 2-3 numbers for the NFL. Quentin Johnson's rookie year, man. I mean, we talked about it at length. We don't have to go into it, but 13.3% targets route run is horrific. DJ Chark, Kyle, I found this out today when I was researching for the show, is on his fourth team in 4 years. He is just bouncing around 1 year contracts for like $3 million, just bouncing around in the NFL, you know, city to city.
Well, did it work for those people?
No, it never does. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but but it might work for us.
Hey, it might work for the Chargers. It's so funny to see how DJ Chark does that every year. But for reference, he's at 12.8% last year earning targets. That's worse than Quentin Johnson. So, like, it's Ladd, honestly.
I think for a median outcome is what I'm asking is him to earn targets at 18%+. I looked over the last decade, a second round wide receiver, the average targets per route run was 18.8%. So if you get him in that range, it's kind of where Jordan Addison was last year. You'll feel really good. The comps for second year wide receiver, or second round wide receivers that are kind of fitting this mold, if he puts up a Christian Kirk type career, I think you'd be very, very happy. I think you'd be a little like, oh, I wish there was more, but he's consistently earned targets throughout his career, got a second contract, and I would say that he's the number one right now on the Jaguars. Like, this, it's a big deal. I'm afraid this is the comp that I'm afraid he's going to turn into is Sterling Shepard, who was taken 40th overall. You know, he ran a ton of routes his rookie year. He actually had 8 touchdowns, but he's never quite earned targets at like this elite level. I mean, they had Beckham and everybody else, but that's kind of the career that like you would be happy with. A long career in the NFL. Shepard got injured a lot recently, but somewhere in this Christian Kirk, Sterling Shepard, even what Jaden Reed did last year was really, really good. Exceeded in the touchdown department, but like beat zone. Like, that's the median outcome, I think, for Ladd McConkey. The low end is not as kind, though. And I want to see if you think this is in the realm. Because no one wants to talk about this right now, except for the people that saw the videos of him running around were like, oh, this dude's small. So what if, on the low end, what if he's Elijah Moore? He can command targets, and he did early on. Remember Elijah Moore's rookie year? He had like that stint from week 9 to week 14 where he was just really awesome. I don't know why I remember those weeks, but that's what it was.
He was good.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, he was really, really good. He gets hurt. Going into the next year, you're like, he's the breakout. They have no one else. And then all of a sudden, he evaporates and can't do anything with his targets. Can he get open? Sure. But Elijah Moore was probably the worst player in DFS to roster this past year because he did nothing with his targets. So Elijah Moore, Anthony Miller are second round players that targets per route run look good, but they didn't do anything with him. And that's the only thing I'm afraid with McConkey.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair, you know, range of outcomes to suggest, because that was kind of the argument with Elijah Moore, is like, you saw it in year one, you saw enough that you're like, in year two, he's going to be great. And then apparently he and the coaching staff just hated each other or something, got put in the doghouse and never really recovered. But he kind of showed you what you wanted to see in year one. I think you're going to see some of that stuff with Ladd McConkey. Now, what does he do in year two? That's a complete question mark. I will say, just with those two players, like the prospect evaluation, if I remember on Elijah Moore, like kind of one of the knocks was like he wins downfield, but he wins a lot from the slot, where it's like these kind of like slot fades, and like he gets downfield and he's not just a slot wide receiver, but his explosive plays mostly came from the slot. And to me, I don't see that with Ladd. So just from like a tape standpoint, but I can't argue. Like I see the path where that happens, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's one of those players that feels like we'll give him a pass. We'll say, oh, it's year one in Greg Roman's system. If things don't go well, he got hurt. Oh, it's been a limited sample size. We trust Justin Herbert. Oh, look, he did get open. So I think he has a high floor based on value and where he goes next year. And he's a player that if you took the end of the first round, like, you got to feel happy. He doesn't feel like a complete boom bust player based on his archetype compared to these other wide receivers and what he can do. So, yeah, we're big Ladd fans, and I'm sadly a Chargers as my second team
fan.
So,
real quick, Kyle, before we move on, I will say on the Elijah Moore type thing, like, if he has that sort of rookie season, remember, Elijah Moore had a ton of value in the offseason after his rookie year.
Yes.
So even though you think about him now and it's like, well, no one wants that guy. Well, after year one, everyone wanted Elijah Moore. So like, even if that does happen, this is a player I think where you still have really good value, whether it's, you know, via trade or whatever in year two. If you're not a believer, I think you'll still get value whether you take him in your rookie drafts now or in a startup in year two.
All right, let's take one more break and we'll be right back.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate: Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellmann's, and boom, next level burgers, it's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for: potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it: Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. There are two kinds of potato salad: deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad, and potato salad made without Hellmann's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From Ladd McConkey to Brock Bowers, we're going to finish. Man, I guess I was talking about Georgia boys, but here we are. Taken by the Raiders, surprisingly, in the draft, only 21 years old. Our rookie rankings have Bowers a little lower. I think that was one of the pushbacks you gave in some of our rookie mocks bets, that you were willing to take him a little ahead of me, kind of in that like 6, 7, 8 range of one quarterback leagues. We have him towards the back of the first round in Superflex. It's like we have him as a fringe 1-2 kind of pick, and he's not going there. So just from looking at that, are we discounting Bowers based on like, okay, well, he's not going to do anything rookie year, and so do you really want him? I think that's been Jason's argument.
Yeah, and it's more of like a, you know, philosophical thing with how you approach rookie tight ends, because, you know, before last year, like, the argument was almost always correct of like, let someone else take them, because they're probably not going to do what you want them to do in year one. And then in year two, the perception is different, so their value is down, and you can really recoup them 3 or 4 years into the career and see the late breakout. That's kind of been the normal career archetype for these guys. But Sam LaPorta changed everything, of course, last year, and Dalton Kincaid. And, you know, with Brock Bowers, like, I keep thinking about his profile coming out. It was better than Sam Laporta's. It was better than Dalton Kincaid's. It was better than all these guys that we talked about last year and the year before and the year before that. Like, he was the focal point of an SEC offense as a freshman, as a tight end. That is crazy, right? Like, this is a player that I think is very, very talented. I think he will succeed in the NFL. The conversation is just, what does he do in year one? Like, is it a Laporta, Evan Engram, Kincaid type of year where you're very excited about him in year two? Or is it the other side of what we've seen from rookie tight ends where it's like, well, yeah, the draft capital was there. Yeah, we were excited about him, but he finishes like the tight end 18 in fantasy. And now you're like, I wish I wouldn't have spent my first round rookie pick on that guy because now I can get him in a trade way cheaper, right? But I just believe in the talent so much that I'm willing to kind of ignore some of those concerns about rookie tight ends. I think it's just a difference in philosophy that me and maybe you and some of the other guys have.
Yeah, and I think if you go into it, if you're the type of manager that says, I took Brock Bowers, I know the production profile, I know that he's good, and they'll figure it out, and he'll figure it out over time, then you can be fine with it. But if you're going in thinking it's going to be gangbusters, I have a hard time seeing that right away, and that's just dependent on your team and what your team needed. And so, you know, there's drafts where I took Jonathan Brooks over him. It's like, I need a running back. I feel good about Brooks' short-term value, and I have another tight end, so I'm passing on Brock Bowers, and I think it's totally fine. With the high end, so you mentioned Sam Laporta, who broke fantasy football and what rookies were supposed to do. We talked about him on the DFS embedding show. If you want to go back to that this past week, I talked about his touchdown expectation and what he did. It's definitely tough to repeat that type of stuff, but that's a different best ball conversation. And then Evan Engram put up a crazy season when he was a rookie, 115 targets. At the time, it was like, oh man, this is incredible. Evan Engram's only going to be awesome. And then you have to wait 5 years until he does anything again. What percentage chance do you give Brock Bowers to have this type of season? And the reason we say that is there's a high end, there's a median where, like, you know, a good 60, 70% of the outcome is going to be in that median range. And then you kind of distribute the high end and the low end for that player. So, on the high end, what percentage chance do you give him a rookie year to be gangbusters? And I would say a top six, top five tight end. Let's just put it that way. Top five finish.
What percentage chance do I give him to do that? 20%.
Okay. I'm probably a little lower in year one, but like 10%. And the point is more saying, like, I have a hard time saying a year from now, he's going to be the tight end one in startups, which is what Laporta is now. Like, that's the kind of leap that he has. Like, Bowers right now we have as the tight end five in startups, and I think he can hold that value. I have a really hard time seeing him go all the way up to tight end two unless other tight ends get injured. You know, if there's like a major injury to Andrews or Pitts or Kincaid, and then he has to put up, in my mind, to jump up to that kind of top end stage, like, he's got to put up at least 7 touchdowns. And I think that's easy to bet against.
Oh, of course. Especially looking at this environment, you know, like, the Laporta comparison is going to be now what we compare every rookie tight end to. It's like, well, if you're not Laporta, like, you didn't really have that great of a year. But, like, think about the Laporta situation. Like, the offensive scheme was awesome with Ben Johnson. Behind Amon Ross St. Brown, there was no one else. So, like, he was kind of the second guy in the passing tree because of Jameson Williams' off-field stuff, whether it's the suspension or injury or whatever, and then it's like Josh Reynolds of the world running routes out there. Like, there's a path for him to earn the targets that he needs to see. And then it's just the offense scored a bunch. They were in scoring position all the time, right? Like, it's one of the best offenses in football the last couple of years. You go to Las Vegas, and you can make some of the same arguments where it's like, you know, they've got Devontae, but they really don't have a true number two guy. I mean, Jacoby Myers, I think, is pretty good for a wide receiver two in the NFL. I would say he's probably a tier above Jameson Williams for sure. So is he the wide receiver two or number two targeter out of the gate? Maybe. Maybe it takes a little bit of time. Is he the third? How many touchdowns does this team score, right, with like Gardner Minshew and AOC, who, by the way, are the same player? Like, last year, their stats were, it's so funny, they were like the exact same in like YPA, completion rate over expectation, catchable target rate. They're like one spot apart in all the rankings. It's so funny.
One spot apart.
So the quarterback play is obviously a concern. And then you also look at like Luke Getsy's offense, who's now the OC. I just don't trust Luke Getsy to create an environment that's conducive to elite scoring for the pass catchers. 27th in pace 2 years ago, dead last in neutral pass rate. And, you know, this past season, 30th in neutral pass rate. Like, Antonio Pierce hired this guy with, like, the identity of, hey, we want to run the ball. This guy's offensive scheme is conducive to running the ball. Let's bring him in. Let's run the ball. So, like, I just have concerns that you'll see these, you know, 38, 39 pass attempt type games from whoever the quarterback is. And so all that to say is I do see a path where he smashes in year one. He's just that good. I think it's quite unlikely just given the environment around him.
I went on this rabbit trail in my mind when you're like, I just don't trust Luke Getsy. Like, on just like so many levels, like not just like play calling, but just like in life. Like, I just, I don't trust this guy.
With anything.
Like, I think he's, you know, a fraud a lot. Like, great guy. I
probably
remember Luke Getsy in his, yeah, in his college days. He went to Pitt and then he went to Akron, the Zips. He was a fun little college quarterback. But this team with the Raiders, I think is going to be one all season that we're like, what are they trying to do? Because it's clear with the moves, they want to run the ball. And then you look at the personnel and it's like Zamir White can work. Behind Zamir White, I don't think we think it can work with Madison and whatever else they're rolling out there. And then the way the targets are going to be distributed is tough with Devonta Adams there. So my median outcome for him, I hate this because he was drafted so high. Like, if Bowers wasn't given the same draft capital, we wouldn't have the same expectations. You know, it's like, this is one of the best tight end prospects ever. He can dominate. Situation sucks. If he put up a season that's similar to Dalton Kincaid, it has a similar role, because Dalton Kincaid was what? A glorified slot wide receiver?
Basically.
Kind of like and Dawson Knox was doing most of the dirty work. That's essentially what this team is asking him to do. Like, be a hybrid type wide receiver tight end and put up a ton of receptions. I mean, Dalton Kincaid, we've mentioned this stat so many times, the fourth most rookie tight end receptions of all time, and yet it's going unnoticed compared to what LaPorta did. So last year, Dalton Kincaid went 73 for 673 and 2. Okay, so the touchdowns weren't great, but we saw him earn a lot of targets. His success rate was almost 62%, which is really good for a tight end. 91 targets. He was running enough routes that we cared about it. And this year, Dalton Kincaid has actually increased in value while other tight ends have gone down. So if he puts up a rookie season similar to this, you would be very, very happy. But even this, like, that's a lot of targets in this offense. Like, can you see him get 91 targets?
I do see a path where that happens. And it's so crazy. Like, the path to me is kind of clear of, like, if the Dalton Kincaid season happens, it's probably because Devontae does fall off a little bit. And
yes,
you might say that's not happening because Devontae Adams, but we didn't think Diggs would disappear either, right? Like, Diggs was literally irrelevant in the last 2 months of the year, where his target count dropped like basically every week. He hadn't had 100 yards since like week, I don't know, 6 or 7 or something like that. Like, he just disappeared in the offense. And yeah, it was scheme change and all that sort of stuff too. But like, it is one of those things that we never think these elite wide receivers are going to diminish. But we've already seen some early signs of the decline from Devontae. Well, I think is he still going to be good? Yeah. But is he going to be elite Devontae that we saw 3-4 years ago? I don't think so. And so when you look at like his yards per out run, his yards after the catch, you know, per reception, his yards per target, like, all the efficiency has dropped every year over the last 3 years for Devontae. So if he does continue to decline and he's not the same player, there will be a little bit of, you know, an opportunity for a young up and coming player in the back half of the year to earn more of those targets, very similar to Dalton Kincaid last year. So I think the comparison makes so much sense to me, especially when you consider that the Diggs Devontae career arc is very much, you know, kind of the same at this point in their career.
Yeah, we had a conversation a year ago where we talked about valuation and how to look at these wide receivers. It was Diggs, it was Devontae Adams, it was Cooper Kupp. And the way that we talked about them is like, okay, they're at this age. You'd rather be a year too early. I know it sucks. If you're competing, sure, ride it out. But you'd rather be a year early on these players, where now we look in 2024 and you're saying, like, Betts is talking about the decline. It's kind of been 3 years in a row just in the efficiency. And you look at that with Diggs and you kind of see it with Kupp. And it sucks because these players at their peak were breaking fantasy football. They won you leagues. But you can kind of see it go that way. So the low end for Brock Bowers, I just want to give this, is a player that was drafted highly in the NFL, a player that came out his rookie year, and you were left like wanting more. It was TJ Hockenson. And I just thought it was interesting when I was making all these comparisons of TJ Hockenson and Sam Laporta, because Ben Johnson the offensive coordinator, was on the roster or like part of the coaching staff, and he became the tight ends coach and then eventually became OC. So it's interesting to see the comparisons. But TJ Hawkinson, as a rookie, like, had competition, at least other tight ends on the roster that were playing a ton of time. Like, TJ Hawkinson had 49% of the snaps, but Jesse James was playing 46%. Logan Thomas was on the roster, also playing snaps too. And when you look at the routes, TJ Hawkinson ended up only with 56 targets, and his targets per out run was just good, but not great. It was 20%. So my question is, if you got this type of season from from Brock Bowers, what TJ Hawkinson did, which is he was the tight end 31, going into year two, would you be like, ah, this wasn't great? Even though Hawkinson has turned it around, gotten a second contract, been a good wide receiver, but you wouldn't say TJ Hawkinson's a great tight end.
I mean, he's one of the better ones, obviously. But
would you be happy with that career?
I mean, I would be probably pretty happy with that. This guy's been tight end 4. Tight end 15 wasn't great. That was 12 games. And then tight end 2, tight end 4. Again, missed some time this past year. Also, his rookie year was only 12 games. So even though he finishes the tight end 31, per game stuff is going to be different. But still, like, I'd be happy if I got a locked in top 6 starting tight end option every single week in my league. I'd be happy with that.
Do you think that people have higher expectations than TJ Hawkinson?
They do.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Because I think you and I would be happy if I knew I was going to get this type of like upside, and TJ Hawkinson's benefited a couple times from Jefferson getting injured and some weak rosters with the Lions. But the expectations are that you're getting a player that immediately is going to be able to contribute and become that. And I think it's going to be a slower burn or an up and down where the TDs hit 1 year, he gets 8 touchdowns, and the next year it's 4, and you're like, So where are you at in terms of Bowers? Like, it's somewhere in between there, because I can't quite figure it out of like the expectation for him.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And the Hawkinson thing for like his rookie year is actually very interesting when you consider the snap count and kind of the route participation. Like, he really wasn't a full-time player. Now, I think Brock Bowers is going to be, but this team just drafted Michael Mayer, 34th overall a year ago? Different front office, like different regime, so clearly like not the same vision for how the offense would work. But this guy is probably still going to be part of the team, right? Like, are they going to run a ton of 2 tight end sets? Is it going to be like Bowers split out a little bit and then, Mayer in line? Like, I don't know. So I do see a path where it's like, they just use this guy because they're like, man, he was the 34th overall pick last year. So you're not seeing the elite route participation, the elite snap rates that you wanted from Bowers right away. So I think that comparison is really good. But I still have high expectations that you're going to see enough in year one that you're very excited about this player entering year two. That's how I feel personally. I just think he's that good of a prospect. Again, we're making all the comparisons in general about rookie tight ends, but this dude was the focal point of Georgia as a freshman. Like, he is so good at football.
So again, I've heard.
They've got him involved as a runner on end-arounds. What tight end does that, Kyle? No one. Like,
Jonnu Smith.
True. Jonnu does do that. But he's just so talented. I think it's going to work out. But we should be realistic that it might not be incredible in year one.
Yeah, I think Dalton Kincaid is a really good outcome. You should be happy about that. He'll hold value and maybe even gain value. I just wanted to give the scenario where you look at the totality of TJ Hawkinson's career and you're like, okay, I would have been happy with that. But after year one, he lost value. Like, oh, I took this player who was taken 8th overall by the Lions, and he was taken 6th overall in rookie drafts. And a year later, his value dropped. And you had to look at the long game. And so I think that's my main point, is like, you might have some bumps, be willing to hang in there, and yet our expectations are way better than TJ Hawkinson. I mean, the expectations for these people, and these people somehow delude themselves into thinking, the expectations for a lot of us is that Brock Bowers is going to take whatever we thought Kyle Pitts could do and throw it in the trash and say, you know what, I'm going to be the tight end 1 over the next, 10 years. And that is really hard to do.
But what's wild, even about the Kyle Pitts thing, this dude still has so much value in Dynasty. In basketball leagues and whatever, like every year we're like, but this year is going to be different. So, hey, even if it's a train wreck in year one for Bowers, we're going to talk ourselves into it next year. So it's fine.
Yeah. And Bowers is, we're going to keep saying, wow, he's still so young. Like, that's going to be the same conversation we're having with Pitts. I mean, the stat that we've talked about many, many times is that at this stage in his career, where Kyle Pitts is at, Travis Kelce had not caught a pass yet at this age. Like, it's just like there's so much room and time, and you can forgive and move on. And then you can have David Njoku seasons where you're like, oh, cool, this happened out of nowhere. I was not counting on you, and now you're my tight end one. Like, that can happen with the tight end position. I do want to recommend this as a resource we have in the Dynasty Pass, the Dynasty Lifecycle article. TJ Hockenson is the cover boy, and so that's part of why I used him in this comparison. But the Dynasty Lifecycle series by Marvin Eloquin goes through each of the positions, kind of shows you the ebbs and flows. And with tight end, it is pretty slow at the beginning. I guess we have to adjust for Laporta. But yeah, so make sure you check that out, ultimatedraftkit.com. If you want to be a part of that, Betts, tell everyone bye.
Yes, hope everyone has an awesome week. We should have a baller back with us next week. We'll see who it is. But more Dynasty stuff coming your way. Check out the UDK Plus. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Footballers Dynasty Podcast. If you want to take your Dynasty skills to the next level, check out thefantasyfootballers.com.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.